Tavis Smiley, and I am delighted to have you with us on today's program. Just to recap, in case you have missed the first 2 hours of this program, we were honored and humbled today to have at the top of our show Dr. Cornel West, independent candidate for president of these United States, who chose this platform to announce his running mate. It is now all over the national news, on all the networks and newspapers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Dr. West announced on this program 2 hours ago that he has chosen Dr. Malina Abdullah to be his running mate in this campaign, which means for the first time ever, voters, certainly African-American voters and beyond, will have an option to choose two African-Americans on the ticket for president and vice president, two noted and brilliant scholars. As I've said a couple times already, interestingly, Malina Abdullah, Dr. Abdullah, is also from Northern California, like Kamala Harris, also an AKA, like Kamala Harris, and also went to Howard, like Kamala Harris, and that's where the similarities end. So it's going to be fascinating to watch this campaign of West and Abdullah as we move through this year between now and November, and we thank again Dr. West and Dr. Abdullah for choosing this platform on which to make that announcement. I said before, and I'll say again, that the black media is more relevant and more necessary now than ever before. There's some questions that don't get asked if we don't ask them, some issues that don't get raised if we don't raise them, some people doing great work and doing big things that don't get profiled if we don't profile them. We're going to discuss two issues in a moment that aren't discussed enough in the mainstream media. So thank God for Jesus. Thank God for black media. And thank God that Dr. West and Dr. Abdullah and a few others every now and again choose a black media outlet, a black media platform to make such a significant announcement that is not lost upon us here at the Tavis Smiley Show or at my home station in L.A., KBLA Talk 1580. We are deeply grateful and indebted to them for choosing this platform nationally and locally to make that announcement. And so we say thank you. And we'll follow this campaign as we are following all the other campaigns between now and November. In this hour, speaking of issues that we need to be talking more about, on the B side of this hour, the backside, our resident physician, Dr. Robert Drummond, on a bias test that kept thousands of black folk from getting kidney transplants. That's beyond disturbing. We'll do that on the backside of this hour. But we commence this hour, our final hour today, talking about the maternal mortality rates for black women in this country. They are far, far too high. And that, frankly, is unacceptable. Dr. Carla Williams joins us right now on the eve of Black Maternal Health Week. And I can assure you, this is the first of a number of conversations we'll have over this Black Maternal Health Week. Why? Because it matters just that much. So it's the first of these conversations about black maternal health, these health disparities, and most importantly, how to improve maternal health outcomes for black women. Dr. Carla Williams, I'm honored to have you on this program. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Tavis. Thank you so much for having me today.
It's my great delight to have you on. Let me jump right in and make the most of the time that we have. I am buoyed by the fact that we are at least, it seems to me, getting more conversation about this issue of black maternal health. We now have a Black Maternal Health Week discussing these issues. What's your sense of whether or not this issue is being raised a little higher on the American agenda?
I definitely think that it's getting a lot more attention. I think that's important and needed because in order to, you know, find solutions and work on the problem, it at least needs to be addressed and highlighted. So I've definitely seen in the past few years that it's receiving a lot more attention.
Yeah, tell me more about these disparities and why. I just want to set the table here, frame the conversation, and we'll build from there. But tell me more about these disparities and why they are so persistent.
Yeah, so it's just to name, you know, what's going on here. We know that the mortality rates for black women across the United States are at least three times higher than their white counterparts. And it can be higher than that depending on the area. So, you know, we're just in a dire state right now where these statistics need to improve. So really what we need to do is create, you know, the solutions for this. And we're starting by highlighting it, and we see that there's things that can be done in our hospital systems to help, you know, improve this issue.
Why not naive in asking this? Well, let me just do this. Let me tell you where I want to go, and we'll get there when we come forward. I am curious as to why this gulf exists, that black women are multiple times more likely to be subjected to death and other issues when it comes to black maternal health. Why does this gap exist? Why, again, is it so persistent? Of course, we'll talk about what we can do about it. Our guest is Dr. Carla Williams. As we start a series of conversations in advance of Black Maternal Health Week, you're listening, and I'm glad about it, to Tavis Smiley.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Sounds different, huh? This is Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and Dr. Carla Williams, as we are commencing right now a series of conversations in the days to come about black maternal health. We are just on the eve of Black Maternal Health Week. And we're going to spend some time on this program nationally talking about black women, about these health disparities, and ultimately about how we can improve maternal health outcomes for black women. We'll talk about these pre-existing conditions. There's a lot to talk about vis-a-vis black maternal health, and I'm honored and humbled to have a platform to do so in the days ahead. So let me pose the question that I mentioned before the break, Dr. Williams. Why are these disparities so stubborn?
Yeah, so these disparities are occurring, and they're so stubborn because we have systems that are just filled with structural racism. We have, you know, patients that aren't being listened to, concerns that aren't being heard and aren't being addressed. And unfortunately, we have providers also that, you know, come with their own biases, this implicit bias that oftentimes isn't even recognized or acknowledged, but there needs, you know, to be a lot of work done in order to dismantle these issues within ourselves.
Yep.
As well.
Tell me more from a medical perspective, and that's what you are, a doctor, obviously. Tell me more.
Correct.
tell me more. That's funny. Correct. Tell me more from a medical perspective, why, no laughing matter here, why black women are, as you mentioned, three times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes than white women. What is that about? Is it pre-existing conditions? Is it the structural racism you mentioned? Is it all the above? Tell me, why does that stat have to be a stat?
Right. I think it is multifactorial. I think it's all of the above, as you mentioned. But, you know, at the root of all of this is racism. And that's due to, you know, how it affects just multiple areas, whether it be access to these hospital systems, whether it be or access to out of hospital birth for that matter, whether it be access to insurance in order to cover their medical expenses. All of these things, you know, are rooted in, unfortunately, discrimination and racism that causes people to not have you know, what they need in order to get adequate health care, and for us to see that these disparities won't exist. So it's an issue where access needs to be improved and where the care given by providers needs to improve as well. The racism in that arena is also something very prevalent, where we see that women that are black are treated differently and their concerns aren't addressed the same way.
Yep. I read in preparing for our conversation about your backstory, and I know that as a child, you decided, just as an adolescent, you knew that you were going to pursue medicine as your path. We may talk about that, for I'll lose you at the bottom of the hour here. I'm always fascinated by people's backstories, particularly given your DR connection. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
I love the DR. That said, tell me more about the providers, because that's part of this equation. We're going to have a guest on this program in the coming weeks. Very well-known case that I'm sure you're aware of here in L.A., where I sit at Cedars-Sinai, a noted national hospital where his wife died in birth, birthing their child. You know this story well. He's going to be a guest. I'm just teasing it. He'll be a guest on this program in the days to come. A lot came out of that, lawsuits, et cetera, et cetera. And it put this issue for many people with a famed hospital like Cedars-Sinai front and center in this conversation. conversation about black maternal health. I'm raising that to drive toward this conversation about the providers that you mentioned earlier. So it's one thing to have black women and black men, for that matter, who go into this profession because they care about their people. They care about cultural competency. They care about et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a different thing for the providers to do their part. Talk to me more about your indictment of the providers in this process where we lose the lives of too many black women.
Well, I mean, even in the case that you mentioned, and I won't talk about that specifically, but it was an issue of, you know, not listening to the concerns.
That's
and
right.
many times, even when, you know, black women have to go into the health system, you know, needing to advocate for themselves and, you know, prepare essentially for a fight many times because, you know, they bring things up that aren't, you know, they're not listened to. They have to request multiple times. Sometimes even you mentioned that cultural competency, but providers aren't even able to really relate to the patient and understand where they're coming from, understand what certain limitations may be. Sometimes they're even labeled as non-compliant or problematic patients simply because they don't speak the same language. And when I say that, you know, okay, they're speaking English, but they don't really understand, you know, where the patient is truly coming from and what their background is. So I feel like it's a responsibility of doctors, nurses, providers in general to, you know, address that level of competency when it comes to understanding the population that they're serving and at the same time dismantling those biases that maybe they don't even realize they have.
Yeah, I want to connect the dots for our audience here because I think it's necessary in this moment to do so. We had a conversation on this program days ago with the president, as I recall, of the National Medical Association, the group of black doctors in this country, and we were talking about the attacks on DE&I in medicine. And I thought about that as you were talking a moment ago, because if we're attacking DE&I in medicine, where there's already a shortage of doctors and providers who don't get it when it comes to the maternal health of black women, if we're making it more difficult, we're putting up more hurdles for black folk to get in this space called medicine, that's only going to make this problem much worse. That's my sense in the years to come. It gets worse, not
Absolutely.
Better, if we're going to put up hurdles for black folk to become doctors. Yes, no?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And there's even studies that show that black people, black patients do better when they're taken care of by doctors that look like them, talk like them, and are of their same background. So, you know, the science is there, the evidence is there, and we need to, you know, not pose these roadblocks and allow people and not make it more difficult. Like you said, make it easier because, you know, it's needed.
Yeah. Tell me more about these social determinants of health that put black women too often in harm's way to begin with.
So, you know, I mentioned the access. Unfortunately, you know, there's issues even with transportation. There's issues with mothers being able to secure childcare for their other children in order to make their, you know, appointments. There's issues with access to Medicaid. We also know that most of the complications that arise in, you know, in maternal health occur in the postpartum state. And there's many places in the United States where Medicaid doesn't cover for an adequate period of time after birth. And that's something that also is being fought for throughout the United States, for Medicaid to be covered, you know, to provide coverage for up to 1 year postpartum. And, you know, even that, we see that that's the highest time where we have that postpartum morbidity and mortality. So those are, you know, some of these issues that affect these black mothers and those social determinants of health, as you mentioned.
Let me get a little personal with you, if I might. I mentioned earlier I was preparing for our conversation by reading more about your backstory. If I have my facts correct, you chose, even as a physician, to have a home birth. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Tell me why you made that decision as a doctor.
As a doctor, I made that decision because with the birth of my first child, which was in the hospital system, I experienced discrimination. I was questioned about my insurance and told, you know, by a provider that they didn't take care of Medicaid patients because they weren't productive members of society. So that was something that obviously was quite off-putting and just set the tone for me to realize that I didn't want to step foot in a hospital again in order to give birth to any children that would come in the future. So I made the decision to switch to the midwifery model of care and birth my subsequent two sons at home.
That's a pretty damning indictment of a healthcare system of which you are a part.
Exactly.
I love it. Exactly. Tell me, nothing more need to be said on that. I take your point.
Nothing more.
Yeah, I take your point. Tell me about Miriam. Tell me about Miriam.
Oh, yeah. So I'm the co-founder and the medical director of Miriam Reproductive Health and Wellness, which is a collaborative women's health clinic in the Bronx. We have myself as the OBGYN and also two wonderful midwives, and we work together to provide all type of reproductive care. We also have additional complementary and holistic services like acupuncture and prenatal massage, pelvic floor physical therapy. So really just to give a nice comprehensive care to our patients in the Bronx who truly need this type of care, as well as working at the same time simultaneously to build a birth center in the Bronx, which is also much needed.
Yep. The Boogie Down. I love the Boogie Down.
Yes.
let me ask you what your advice is in real time. You told the story a moment ago eloquently about why you made your own decision to do home birth as a physician. Not everybody has that option, and again, maybe I'm misspeaking. Maybe they do. But what's your advice? So long as we are seeing the data, which again is inarguable, incontrovertible. As long as we're seeing this data about Black maternal health outcomes and the ways too often, not always, but too often, Black women are maltreated in hospital settings. What's your best advice to Black women about how they go about making their own choices?
I would say that, you know, educating themselves and getting familiarized with all the options is key. I would say, you know, before, if possible, before even thinking about, you know, getting pregnant or planning that time in your life to, you know, interview people, to ask your friends and family for stories and to see, you know, what their experiences were and help that make an informed decision about which route you want to go. It's good. It's important for Black women to know that the hospital, as long as they are low risk, is not the only option to give birth. They have the option of, you know, working with midwives and, you know, seeking an out-of-hospital birth, and many times they are safer in that environment, especially and precisely if they are low risk. We see the evidence of that in other industrialized countries where midwifery is where most women get their, you know, prenatal care, because that's the system that works and saves lives. If you're low risk, you can be taken care of by a midwife. And if an OB like myself needs to step in because things become a little bit more complicated, then that's great. But an integrated system where we're all working together is key. And Black women need to know that they have those options.
I want to be careful not to blame Black women in this process. That's why we're doing this, conducting this conversation, and
right,
we'll be conducting others as we move through Black Maternal Health Week, which we recognize every year from April 11th through April 17th. So we're on the eve of it, as I mentioned earlier. But what say you again to Black women about these pre-existing conditions that they ought to work a little harder to get under control if, in fact, they're thinking about getting pregnant?
Yes, I would say that being mindful of that preconception period is crucial. You know, it's important to get those regular checkups even outside of pregnancy. Some women don't even see the doctor at all unless they're pregnant. And again, you know, those issues, the social determinants that we already mentioned, they can definitely, you know, pose some hurdles, but it's important to just stay on top of our health. And there's things that can be done. That doesn't necessarily mean medication. That can be preventative things like, you know, good diet with whole foods and exercise, movement, and all of these things are important in order to stay healthy and just put yourself in the best place possible for a healthy pregnancy and baby. So that preconception phase is key.
We talked earlier about the amazing and loving work that you were doing through Merriam, this three office clinic in the Boogie Down in the Bronx. I want to close our conversations as I teed up earlier by asking how you knew as a child, as an adolescent, that your path was going to be medicine and looking out for other Black women.
Well, I was always intrigued by childbirth. I grew up watching, you know, these television shows like A Baby Story, and just seeing all of these beautiful examples of what birth could be. And I just grew up more natural minded, and everything was, you know, getting a T for this, or, you know, a salve for that. So I always knew that I wanted to be involved in childbirth, and that I wanted things to be as natural and holistic as possible. And, you know, I held on to that through my training and was able to get to a place where I could offer that to those who wanted it and felt like it was the right path for them. So that's how I ended up here today.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you are where you are today, and I celebrate your work and witness, and that's what it is for me. Say nothing of saving lives. It ain't just work and witness. That's important, but it's saving lives, and that's a beautiful thing. As I said, we're on the eve of Black Maternal Health Week. It officially commences tomorrow, April the 11th. Through the 17th. And speaking of tomorrow, in our second hour, I believe, in our second hour, we will talk to FemTech founder Kimberly Seals Allers about Earth. That's IRTH, Earth, an app designed to eradicate racial disparities in childbirth. So we're going to be doing this for a number of days to come as we celebrate Black Maternal Health Week and use it as an opportunity to talk about Black women, about these health disparities, and most importantly, as I said earlier, how to improve maternal health outcomes for them. For now, we thank Dr. Carter Williams for this kickoff conversation. Dr. Williams, congrats again. Thank you for the work you're doing in the Bronx, and good to have you on this program.
Thank you so much, Tavis.
Good to have you. More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley.